Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Along with Jim Garrity of National Review, I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. One day until midterm election day 2014. We're just about there. Those who haven't already voted absentee or through early voting will be going to the polls tomorrow, hopefully. And as we all know, the balance in the Senate is at stake, and we'll get to our individual predictions in some of those states later on. But we still do have good, bad, and crazy martinis. Let's start with the good. And Tavis Smiley has been pretty consistent all the way up to a couple days before the election day. He was on Face the Nation with Bob Schieffer and a whole host of other folks on Sunday, Jim. And Bob Schieffer basically said, if there's a huge Democratic turnout, it could save a few seats here for the Democrats. But you don't seem to think that there's a lot of reasons for them to be all that fired up. And Tavis Smiley once again explained why.
And they come to you as if you're sort of, how might I put this, election day first responders. They send out the SOS. We need you to come save us once again. I think that's disingenuous. I think it's disrespectful. I think it's demeaning in North Carolina. You say that we want to move beyond race. We're in a post-racial America, and yet you played to the race card in North Carolina, in Louisiana, in Georgia. You can't win unless the black vote turns out for you. And in Kentucky, as was discussed earlier, you have a candidate there who four times in a matter of minutes wouldn't even admit to voting for Barack Obama. You want his loyal base to support you. You give the president the Heisman, but you want his constituents to vote for you. I mean, Peter only denied Jesus three times. It's a four-time denial in a matter of minutes. But you want the black vote to come save you again.
Jim, let's leave the theological comparisons aside for just a moment here. But when it comes to the point Smiley was making even before that, that black unemployment rate is triple that of the rest of the country, and Hispanics haven't gotten much of what they need and want from this president either, it's asking quite a lot of them to just follow the marching orders again.
You know, I'm sure you and I probably vote differently from Tavis Smiley. We may come down differently on a whole bunch of different issues, but his logic is really sound in this entire, you know, argument here. And it's going to be an interesting, you know, if Election Day turns out the way everybody suspects it's going to turn out, you may have Democrats really reevaluating the entire argument of, oh, if you're a vulnerable red state Democrat, try to distancing yourself from the president. Maybe the lesson of this, the lesson of 2010, the lesson of 2006, is that you really can't distance yourself that much from an unpopular president. In the end, people are going to say, well, you know, you're a Democrat, Obama's a Democrat. I don't care how much you insist you're different from him and you're different from Nancy Pelosi and you're different from Harry Reid. I know that most of the time you're going to line up with them, so I'm going to vote for the other guy. And so if you really are, particularly as dependent as Democrats have become on these demographics, that are kind of, you know, they show up some years and they don't. You know, African-Americans and young voters and, you know, Hispanics to a certain extent and single women in particular, then maybe you don't bother distancing yourself from the president. Maybe you concede the middle and you just try to drive up your base turnout as high as you can. And as much as you might think, oh, that's a crazy strategy. Well, the current strategy they're trying now doesn't seem to be working. And I think, you know, Smiley, as much fun, as much relish as we're enjoying Obama not being invited to campaign with any Senate Democrat other than Gary Peters in Michigan, in a way, maybe he's got a really good point, because most of these were all folks who were elected in 2008. He's why they're in the Senate in the first place for a lot of these incumbents, the Kay Hagans of the world. So they are kind of ingrates. And maybe, you know, at some point, if you really want to drive your base turnout, you have to do that rally with the president. And it's much better to say, you know what, I know everything hasn't turned out the way we wanted, but I voted for this guy twice. I'm proud of this guy and I'm sticking with him. Rather than to say, it's nobody's business who I voted for in a presidential election year.
On to the bad martini now. And yesterday was kind of closing argument day for the two parties on the Sunday morning chat shows. And on Fox News Sunday, it was Mitt Romney representing the Republican Party. And Jim, it was just last week when we were talking about the mysterious buzz a week before the midterms for a possible Jeb Bush presidential run that the base might not be all that excited about a Jeb Bush presidential run, because his two most passionate issues are more left-leaning immigration reform policy and Common Core. So what does Mitt Romney use as the closing argument for the GOP?
What you're going to see is when you have Republican House and Republican Senate, you're going to see a provision, first of all, to secure the border. Second of all, to deal with those who've come here illegally. And third, to make sure that our immigration policies are more open and transparent to the many people who do want to come here illegally. That's going to happen. You're going to see a bill actually reach the desk of the president if we finally have someone besides Harry Reid sitting in the Senate.
Vote Republican for comprehensive immigration reform, Jim.
No! Mitt, what are you doing? This is why everyone had a trouble with you.
And thus endeth Romney 2016. When we look back after this election, it'll be really kind of fascinating to kind of, you know, the other, like, if why did you distance yourself from Obama is one of the first questions that people ask Democrats in the postmortem. Maybe a big question will be to Republicans. Why did, you know, particularly post after the Children's Crusade, after, you know, the border was awash in these little Moppets and their scabies and all these other, you know, issues dealing with the, you know, being flooded with children coming across the border. Why did you not drop amnesty like a hot potato and say, look, nothing is going to happen. We cannot have anything happen until the border is secure. That's not going to happen overnight. Maybe someday we can talk about how we're going to deal with this. But in the meantime, we got to secure the border. We got to go after people who are employing illegals and exploiting them and all that kind of stuff. We got to go after gang members. We got to go after drug dealers. We got to go after all these types and emphasize all that. And give your base what it wants rather than these elites who keep insisting, oh, we'll have cheaper labor, America. Why antagonize your base? In retrospect, the story of this election cycle might be the both parties antagonizing their bases.
All right, on to the crazy martini now, Jim. And if the Bruce Braley campaign has learned anything in Iowa, it's choose your surrogates well. Because you've got Bill Clinton.
The Braley campaign, the Bailey campaign.
Oh, that's number one. You had Michelle Obama and Bill Clinton calling him Bruce Bailey. Then the Obama administration tried to fix it, but they got Braley right, but then said in an email that he was running for governor, not senator. So then he figures, well, what would be better for me as a closing argument than the man who's easily won this seat for the past 30 years, Tom Harkin. Tom, come on up and explain why they should vote for me and not Joni Ernst. Well, here's what Tom Harkin told him.
Joni Ernst, she's really attractive. And she sounds nice. Well, I got to thinking about that. I don't care if she's as good-looking as Taylor Swift or as nice as Mr. Rogers. But if she votes like Michelle Bachmann, she's wrong for the state of Iowa.
Kind of some tough, echoey audio there. Basically said she's attractive, she sounds nice, she could be as attractive as Taylor Swift, and as nice as Mr. Rogers, but if she votes like Michelle Bachmann, then she's not right for Iowa. Here's Joni Ernst, I think, in a couple of really well-crafted responses.
I was very offended that Senator Harkin would say that. I think it's unfortunate that he and many of their party believe that you can't be a real woman if you're conservative and you're female. I believe if my name had been John Ernst attached to my resume, Senator Harkin would not have said those things.
Jim, if this had been said about a Democratic woman running for Senate, this would be leading every newscast in the country right now.
One of the great ironies, of course, Greg, is that Taylor Swift is right now penning her song about her painful breakup with Senator Tom Harkin. I mean, so it's natural he would, you know, use her as the measuring stick of attractiveness. Actually, come to think of it, Senator, she's kind of, why are you looking at pictures of Taylor Swift? Why is that the first attractive woman who comes to mind? I suppose we should be thankful for Lena Dunham, or not anybody who's on the Disney Channel or anything. Good thing he's getting out of office. The observation that, like, the last big grand lesson of this election, and it's becoming increasingly clear, liberalism is an excuse to be a jerk. We see this demonstrated day after day. We see it from the likes of Alec Baldwin. We see it, you know, every time somebody on the left says something utterly obnoxious and they kind of shrug it off and they, well, you know, why are you getting offended? You know, all that kind of stuff. In this, as you said, you know, it's possible some people are over, you know, don't vote for her because she's pretty. I mean, how condescending is that? How obnoxious is that? And how, you know, stupid is that? I think my friend Kurt Schlichter put it well when he said, that's Colonel words to you, and this is Tom Harkin, who, you know, maybe he was having a flashback to NAMM, right? Right, Greg?
Probably unlikely, actually.
Yeah, pretty unlikely.
Pretty unlikely that that would be the case. All right, real quick, Jim is off to do election night coverage at The Blaze, so he'll be out tomorrow and Wednesday. There will be three martini lunches, but right now is his last chance to kind of give his predictions for not only the Senate landscape, but any other House or gubernatorial races he wants to. Jim, you want to go first, or you want to hear mine first?
Why don't you go first, and I'll correct you.
Okay, sounds good. All right, in terms of the toss-up races, I think we can all pretty much agree on what the competitive races are. I think the Democrats hold on to North Carolina and New Hampshire, albeit narrowly. And for some reason, my gut just tells me Pat Roberts does not hang on in Kansas. That's the end of the bad news, though. I think Republicans win in Alaska with Sullivan, they win with Gardner in Colorado, they win with Cotton in Arkansas, and they take the three that we've always known they were going to take in West Virginia, South Dakota, Montana. Iowa, I've been going back and forth on just because it's a tough state, it's a Harkin seat, but given what we just talked about, I think that might put her over the top. And ultimately, that'll be important because if the other two seats go to runoffs, that means that'll be the clincher for a Republican majority. But I do think that Republicans will ultimately take Louisiana and Georgia, and I'm not sure Georgia's going to a runoff.
I see really very little to pick at in your assessment there, Greg. I think one of the lessons I've taken from past cycles is don't really look for the upsets because they don't happen very often. If most of the polls show a candidate ahead, then it's probably going to turn out that way. Now, if you see something like New Hampshire, where, you know, Brown has closed heroically and most of the polls have we one or the other ahead by a point or two, we can't really be surprised by either. Having said that, only a few polls have had Scott Brown ahead, and when he does it, but it's by a point. I think it's safe to say, I'm going to say Shaheen wins, but if Scott Brown wins, I actually won't be that surprised. And you know, it'll be a testament to his ability to out-hustle. I mean, he's just a great retail politician who just has decided, I'm going to stop at every small town in New Hampshire and shake hands with everybody. And, you know, generally that sometimes you can see that having big effects. I feel good about Joni Ernst. I think Cory Gardner. It's just an astounding early vote margin that the Republicans have accumulated in Colorado. It's expected, since you don't know exactly what the final turnout's going to be, but it's probably about half or maybe even more than half. And that's kind of a stunning amount. Tough margin for them to overcome that. I agree with your assessment on Georgia. If you asked me today, I'd say it's going to go to a runoff. It's very possible Purdue gets, you know, 49.8% or something like that and narrowly misses it. The precedent of this is 2008. Republicans won big in the runoff. Georgia Democrats will lose interest. And, oh, by the way, that runoff is not until January. Polling in Louisiana has been really consistent. The good news is Mary Landrieu leads the initial round, but it's in the low 30s. And that's a terrible place for an incumbent. She's going to go to the runoff. I actually don't think the turnout will drop off that much and the Democrats will kind of make this their last stand. But I kind of, you know, all the polling shows Cassidy pretty healthily ahead in the runoff polling numbers. I too, think Pat Roberts is going to lose, narrowly, and it wouldn't stun me to see him win, but I think if you're a Republican, you can't count on that one right now. North Carolina, Tom Tillis just can't seem to get a lead, even though it's really, really close. So I am just not counting on a GOP upset. I think it's safe to say that either New Hampshire or North Carolina will be the first ones that we will probably have a definitive decision out of that is meaningful. And if Republicans win either one of those, then it's Katie bar the door.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. Not a lot of attention to the House. Most projections say Republicans pick up 9-10 seats somewhere in that neighborhood. That's probably about right. On the governor's side, I think Walker survives, which is great news. Hopefully Greg Abbott wins huge. I'm sure he will. But the one downer is I think the chameleon will in fact win in Florida. Charlie Crist wins as a Democrat.
Yeah, I completely agree. If you said to me early in the cycle, which are the most important competitive races? Because something like Texas is, you know, important. But it's kind of fun just to watch, you know, does Wendy Davis hit 40?
Yeah.
And if she does badly, that's just going to be awesome. That's, you know, it's just we're just going to laugh and laugh and laugh. So I'd say the two most important races of the cycle in the gubernatorial races for Republicans were Wisconsin and Florida. Polling in Florida has been really, really close. If the fools in Florida want to get another round of Charlie Crist, you can't help some people, Greg. And it's too bad because I think Rick Scott has actually been a much more successful governor than people give him credit for. The state's doing pretty well. Yet, strangely enough, you know, people don't seem to be giving him the credit for it. So the most important one probably for 2016 purposes, both for 2016 purposes and for the issue of public sector unions, Scott Walker needed to be reelected, and I think he's a pretty safe bet. Although I think it probably is only going to be about a 51-48, 52-48 range. That's about the ceiling for a Republican in a state like Wisconsin.
That certainly is. So if you and I are anywhere close to being right, we'll be all smiles the next time we talk to each other on Thursday, and let's hope we are close to being right.
Hopefully we'll be full of good cheer on Thursday, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today, and tune in on Tuesday for the next edition of the 3 Martini Lunch.